204 DGS on KMOX. Let's do a little post-mortem on the Dodgers, and let's preview the Brewers.
Wow, post-mortem's the right term, man.
Yeah.
It's been really bad for the Cardinals. I mean, obviously, they lost 2 out of 3 to the Dodgers. The games were competitive. Mm-hmm. It's not like they went out and got blown out.
Good games.
But you're not scoring any runs. They've lost 6 of their last 7 now. So they lost 2 of 3 to the Dodgers after getting swept by the Reds. So I don't want to bore anybody too much with numbers, but here's the deal. So there's 38 games left for the Cardinals. It looks like right now 86 wins is what it takes for the third wild card spot. That's the pace that Atlanta's on, and they're in that spot. And you're 5 games behind them. So the Cardinals have to play at a 107 win pace just to get to 86. They've got to go 25-13. So they need to win essentially 2 out of every 3 moving forward to even have a chance at the third wild card spot. So they're going to have to start a streak. I mean, we can get into all of the different problems. At times it's been the starting pitching. They're not hitting, and they haven't hit for weeks now. And now they're starting to go to platoons to try to get the advantages. And my response to that is, well, why were we not doing that all along if we think this is the best way to score runs? The answer to that is because earlier in the year they were, I think, overly attached to some veteran left-handed guys on the bench that didn't help them win games because they needed more right-handed presence.
Yeah, flesh this out for me, because many times on the break you will go into a diatribe about so many things the Cardinals have done and are doing make no sense.
No, and they start off making sense, okay? Like, this is my biggest criticism that I've voiced about the Cardinals for the last several years, the consistent one, is it seems like a lack of willingness. It's either a lack of willingness or a lack of ability to adjust on the fly, right? So, like, the game plan going in is not the problem. I don't really have a problem with how the roster was structured to begin the year. They went out and got a bunch of veteran pitchers that really helped in the first half of the year. And it's still helping now to a degree because it's, you know, they've been able to carry a lot of the workload, right? Sonny Gray was a great acquisition. Kyle Gibson was a really strong acquisition. They did a lot of things that made sense. Having, for example, Brandon Crawford on the roster at the beginning of the year made sense. We had no idea what Mason Wynn was. You know, he only played about a month in the majors last year, and he struggled at the plate last year. We had no idea what he was going to be, and you had no other shortstops near the upper levels in the minor league. So you needed to have somebody who could play shortstop in case Mason Wynn flamed out. Totally made sense. Matt Carpenter, to a degree, made sense. You wanted somebody who is a stable veteran personality. You wanted some insurance at DH, something along those lines. The problem is, as the season went along, it became very evident that one of their biggest weaknesses was their weakness against left-handed pitching. And they didn't do anything to adapt to that. So you kept running with the same guys who are all struggling against left-handed pitching. And it took until the trade deadline to go get Tommy Pham, who would help with that. But because of the injury to Ciani, and because of other guys struggling, Pham gets thrown into a role where he's playing every day, which is not where he's best suited. He's best suited to playing all the time against lefties and occasionally against righties. And they've been in this weird in-between where the attachment to the veteran guys that you needed at the beginning of the year for various things, but don't really need now. They don't help you now because they're redundant. They do the same things that the guys that you would need help with, right? Yeah. They're left-handed hitters that don't hit lefties. Well, you can't use them to offset matchups. They don't have the flexibility on the roster.
Tell me why had I been there at the beginning of the year, and I'm not Dave Glover, I'm some genius, okay? I have some credibility in baseball. And I say to you and Mozeliak and Marmol, Carpenter's a waste on the bench. Bring up Victor Scott or bring up Walker and leave him here all year and let him fail until he doesn't.
Yeah, so there's 2 parts to this. One.
Remember, I'm a genius.
Yeah, I think there's 2 parts to that equation, and some of it has to do with expectations and some of it has to do with what works, right? So look at Milwaukee. They have a star young player named Jackson Chourio. We'll see him. He's one of their starting outfielders. The first 2 months of the year, he was terrible. He played probably 80% of the games the first 2 months. He was terrible. He was, you know, below 600 on the OPS for people that care about the numbers. He was bad. But they never sent him down. They never took him out of the lineup. And for the last 2 months, he's been one of the best hitters in the National League. He's 900 OPS. He's playing like an all-star for the last 2 months. He's figured it out. And the question is, why do the Brewers choose to keep him and play him and not have to worry about it, where the Cardinals chose the opposite? And the reason is the standings. Milwaukee got off to a good start. They had no pressure. They had no reason to panic. They had no issues to worry about. So they just can leave that guy because other people were hitting.
Sort of like we've done with Gorman.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So because they were winning games, there was no urgency to make a change with a struggling young guy. You were able to just leave him alone and let him figure it out. Mm-hmm. When you look at Jordan Walker last year and this year, the number one thing that made them have to send him down was the team was struggling. And when you're struggling, you can't just put a guy out there and let him learn because you're going to lose games. This is a team that says every year their goal is to make the playoffs. So when you're not playing like that, they need to make changes. And so when Walker got sent down, he was awful. I mean, we all saw it. He wasn't hitting. In a setting where the Cardinals used to be, 5 years ago, 8 years ago, you probably don't send him down.
Yeah.
You probably let him play through it because he's just going to bat seventh or eighth. And this is where it comes back to Goldschmidt and Arenado. Those guys not being what was expected has changed everything else. And what ends up happening is you end up chasing your tail. You're always trying to chase something down because you're behind and there's always a thing to fix. And you have to keep fixing it because you're not winning enough games. And the reason you're not winning enough games this year is that the guys you count on for production are not producing. Mm-hmm. Now, again, Arenado's been better here lately. Last 3-4 weeks, he's been really good. But that doesn't change the fact that over the course of the year, he's still been a league average hitter. That's the biggest change, right? Milwaukee had guys producing, so they could let a kid work it out at the big league level.
Yeah.
The last 2 years, the Cardinals were in such a hole, they couldn't do that.
Two more questions. So you say that we need to go like 25-13 or something like that. We need to go on a run, not yesterday, today.
Now,
it
yeah.
It needs to start
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
How do you do it? What can you do? What can a ball club do to even make a dent in that?
So the things you could do would be there's only so much impact you can get at this point, right? So the main things you could do is one of the things that they are doing, which Ollie Marmol talked about this weekend, which is, they are playing platoon splits right now. Guys like Nootbaar and Burleson and Gorman that are struggling against lefties are not going to face lefties.
People who don't understand that terminology.
Right. So most players are better against the opposite-handed pitcher. So that's not 100%, but most of them. Because you see it better. You have a better view of it. You know, the ball coming out, you just get a better, longer look at it, and that helps you decide breaking ball, fastball, whatever. So that's normal. And some people, that difference, though, is greater than others. Some guys, it's almost even. Some guys have a reverse split, which Jordan Walker has had. He's always been better against righties than lefties, which is weird, but it's been true. But what they're doing is they're going to try to maximize the advantages they can, left versus right, right versus left, which we could all argue they should have been doing all along. And if you're only doing it now that it's desperation time, it's probably too late. You might have needed to do that 2 months ago as opposed to now. But that's Monday morning quarterbacking. The question is, what can you do now? You can do that. You can change the roster. You can bring up some right-handed bats from AAA and see if they're better than the older left-handed hitters that you're putting out there. Do you need Brandon Crawford on this team? Probably not. You got 38 games. Mason Wynn's probably going to play 35 of them. Is the 3 games at shortstop that Crawford will start, is that worth not having a guy like Thomas Sejesi, who's a right-handed hitting infielder?
And to me, that's an obvious answer. The answer is, of course, bring up Sejesi.
Well, or Lucan Baker. Lucan Baker's got 84 home runs the last 3 seasons at AAA. He's got 65 home runs the last 2 years at AAA, and he's a right-handed hitter who destroys left-handers. You could bring him up and say, you're going to play against lefties and only against lefties. There are things you could do. Those are all maybes, by the way. We don't know for sure that they would work, but they would make more sense than carrying a player you don't need. But the team likes the player. They like that he's a leader. They like he's a veteran presence. I would argue that matters more on opening day than it does in August. I would argue that now that doesn't matter at all. What matters now is, how do you score more runs? That's it.
My other question is, if you know, if you have a 3-game series, things can go worse than if you have a 7-game series, right? And be like, if you and
things I, tend to average out over time.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so over a whole season that we've seen, we've had 2 seasons because we had our crap one and we had our good one. Now we're in our 3rd season and it's starting out kind of crap. Like if we get to the end of the season and we're down by 5 to 8 games, other than a lack of talent, What do you attribute it to when it's over that long of a stretch?
You're talking about the multiple years and all that. Yeah, I mean, this has been building for a while, and you were what the hope has been is that bringing in Nolan Arenado, bringing in Paul Goldschmidt, signing Wilson Contreras, going and getting Sonny Gray. You're noticing a trend here? All of the top players on the team had to be acquired from outside.
Mm-hmm.
This is the result of not developing impact players over the past 7 or 8 years.
I thought, though, not that I'm accusing you of talking out of both sides of your mouth, but I swear I've heard you and Ronj and Bernie talk about how good we are at that with guys like Burleson.
They're great at that. They're great at finding good players, like complimentary players.
And making them very good players.
And yes, they're great at finding players that are not stars, but they're good, contributing, helpful players. They've been doing this forever.
What are we not good at?
Finding stars and developing stars and turning making pitchers better than they were. So you take a guy that throws 92 and you work with him and you get him to throw 96 and you improve his slider. You change his slider to a sweeper. You change, changeup doesn't work, Ben. Just can that. We're going to go with a splitter instead. They haven't been doing that from within. I mean, I've said this a couple times this year. The last legitimate, like, starting pitcher that they've developed that they hung on to at all was Jack Flaherty. Well, that was almost 7 years ago that he arrived. Now, they did draft and develop Zach Gallen, who is a Cy Young contender in Arizona, and Sandy Alcantara, who is a Cy Young contender in the Marlins.
So it sounds like we do it, we just trade them away.
But even those were a long time ago. I mean, Marcelo Zuna trade was 6 years ago, 5-6 years ago. So it's a long time to not have an impact starter. You know, every starting pitcher on this team right now is from outside. Sonny Gray's a free agent signing. Lance Lynn was a free agent signing. Even though you brought him up way back when, that doesn't count when he's left and gone for a long time and come back. You had to pay him to come in. Kyle Gibson was a free agent signing. Steven Matz was a free agent signing. The only guy that's been starting that's their own guy is Pallante. And that's only been about half the year.
I know the buck stops with Mr. DeWitt, but who do you blame for that?
I mean, it's everybody. There's no one person. I mean, if you're going to go one person, well, it's the owner, right? Because they're the one in charge. But if you're going baseball ops, I mean, John Mozeliak's in charge of baseball ops. So whether it's his direct fault or not, I mean, when you're the boss, you're the boss. Just like when you're the manager, you're going to wear the team's 1-loss record, right? If your team's losing too many games, you're probably going to get fired. You're going to be the one that wears that. And when you look at, like, just think about the Brewers. The Brewers now do all of the things the Cardinals used to do. They take players, they bring them in, and they make them better, right? They make smart trades and make timing things. And if you look at what they are, there's no reason you can't be that. There's no reason. I mean, the Brewers have a lower payroll. They don't have more money to spend on scouting or anything like those along those lines. And, you know, if I'm going to go overly simplified, there was a pattern and a system that worked for the Cardinals for about 20 years. And it's been gradually working less and less, and there hasn't been enough of a change to accommodate that change.
If your day sounds like,
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
223 DGS Wheels was just saying on the break how much you'd like to get rid of Twitter, but it's a necessary tool, necessary evil for what you do for a living. I saw that the Hawk Tua girl threw out the first pitch. I hate this because as a minor celebrity, what has happened in the last 20 years with social media has been terrible for celebrities of all sizes because people don't need them and people don't want them. They'd rather have a girl who makes a dirty joke and goes viral. And so are we just screwed? Like, is this just what we are and who we are now? And what would the possible sea change be? What could you even fantasize and imagine that somehow supplants social media or reins it in or makes it into something not so toxic?
People get sick of it.
It's probably the best bet.
I mean, that's pretty much. I mean, you look at everything in human history, it's all come and gone, right? I mean, like, there were things that were super popular 100 years ago that nobody talks about or cares about now. Mm-hmm. Being a sports guy, the most popular sports used to be top three were baseball, boxing, and horse racing. And that wasn't even that long ago. That's 80 years ago. And two of those don't even rate when it comes to people's attentions.
I still think we are far from... Social media just has not been around long enough for us to know if it has eternal stick. I think it might have eternal sticking power. I don't know if it's necessarily one of those things that's just going to fade away.
Well, I don't think it goes away. I'm talking about the way it's used, right? Because TV's not going away. It's never changing, but it's being used differently and for different reasons.
Is it as simple as we're just so geeked out by being connected to one another for the first time?
It could be. Yeah. And that's really only been like that for a tiny blip in the length of human existence. I mean, 20 years is just not a very long time.
No.
Everyone in this room remembers it, you know, and we're not.
Mm-hmm. Where else could you send a direct message and tag a president, an elected official, a superstar, a celebrity, an athlete, and maybe get a response?
Find your ex-girlfriend from high school. I mean, like, for real, like, it's almost anything you want to do, you can do.
Maybe we just figure out how to better use it. And what I mean is we get sick of the drama. That's the hope. I hope everybody gets sick of the nonsense, but it's incentivized.
Which we do.
Yeah, no, eventually we do. It's just a matter of when and how long, you know, do we see it, or is it going to be further down the road?
I don't know if we do. I mean, we in this room, sure, but we as a collective society across the world, I'm not so sure we
do. Just look at how music tastes have changed in 100 years.
I predict that celebrities come back, but when they do 10 or 15, 20 years from now, Gen Alpha or Z or whoever it is going to think that they invented it because they wouldn't have grown up with real celebrities.
We all do that stuff. Yeah, you're right. They're gonna be like, look what we're doing.
Yeah. There are just this handful of people that are super talented that can entertain us, and I'm going to stop watching my brother-in-law's cousin Ned take out the trash and fight raccoons, you know?
Although that trash raccoon fight was
kind of gotcha, didn't it?
Do you have Ned's channel? I'd like to watch it.
Welcome back, guys. DGS, our buddy Matt Chambers is here from First Alert 4. See, I'm a company man. You guys have drilled it into my head now. You are, I usually get up.
Oh, my God.
I get up about 5:45. And I'm legitimately excited to watch you. You're my guy. But my HVAC units are old. And so when it's like 99 degrees, I dread you. Like, I'm watching and like, oh, there's Claire. And oh, look at, there's Mo. And then here you come. I'm like, not today.
This jerk.
Not today, my friend.
You keep your mugginess to yourself, Chambers.
Talk to me when it's in the 80s.
That's right. But this week, you're delightful.
I'm with you. Yeah, the Q rating is like all of a sudden through the roof. Don't talk to me in December.
Commiserating because Chambers and I will never retire. He because he has 14 kids. Me because I buy too many things on eBay. But like Earhart's got a countdown. You're like,
I know. And all these other people are going part-time. And I'm like, must be nice having a light at the end of the tunnel. I'll never know what that's like.
Someone recently, you're having one of those talks, you know, and people are kind of pumping in for information, and they're like, well, you seem to have such a close connection with your kids, and they seem to be everything to you. Can you imagine not having kids? I'm like, oh my God, can I ever? Oh, yes. To the point I had to pull it in.
Right. Like, bring it together, man. You're a dad. You're a dad. You love them.
You mean like this life without those two? Oh.
Oh my God, are you serious? I'm on a beach right now. Are you kidding?
I'd have so much.
Yeah, but blah, blah, blah. I wouldn't trade it for anything yet. Yeah.
Exactly.
All of it just
what would I do without those guys? How many kids you up to now?
Six.
You sure?
Last count. Well, yeah. I mean, there's some...
You and McGonagall.
Legal. Yeah, that's right.
Lord.
Catholics. What are you going to do?
Not a damn thing you can do. I've told this story before, but I took he and his lovely wife to the ADA event, and I rented a limo bus and the whole bit, and everyone's in a suit and tie. And you know when you go to someone's house... And even if it's like a disaster, hey, let's pick it up a little. Let's throw this stuff into the closet. The McGonagalls didn't pick up one thing. There were 50 cat trees, and there were more little girls sitting on them than there were cats. I mean, it was they were painted like Native Americans. It was
Lord of the Flies.
It right. was.
Free range.
And they're, children. Like, just take a look. Yeah, this is what it is.
Now, let's go to this event.
Now, let's
quickly
get in the limo bus and drive away.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth. Like, the thing that bothers me the most, because I am kind of, you know, if I was a childless man, I'd probably have a, you know, there'd be a place for everything and everything in its place, but I just can't live that lifestyle. Thing that bugs me the most is there's not a drywalled corner in the house where you can't see whatever that metal thing is they put on there before they mud it and paint it, because... And if you can, if there is still paint on it, it's so discolored at the height of hands that it's disgusting.
I'm like, you have boys, don't you?
It's a mix. But yes, we've got
at least some in there, because you can tell.
Well, and you learn to let that kind of stuff go. And you know that one day, as you're puttying it all up, a little tear will come to the corner of your eye. You'll be like, you know,
that's
it's
right.
Too damn quiet in this house.
Phoebe's now. Best friends in the neighborhood. There are six kids, six, seven, eight, something like that. And at my 50th birthday party, I was talking to the dad, and I'm like, "How do you do it?" And he had the best response. He goes, "I do the same thing you do. We just have lower standards."
Okay. Yes, I think that's fair. I think that's fair. I just set the bar lower.
Yeah, that's all there is
and
to
I'm
it.
And I'm never disappointed.
I'm digging your new commercials. You like doing those?
Oh, thank you. I more than I should.
Yeah.
And that's not for, you know, if you ask different people at the station, you would get a wide range of answers. I love that kind of cheesy.
Yeah.
You know, I was the
you
kid.
You do it well.
I was in like the eighth grade musical. Like yeah. I think I can act, even though I probably really can't. And our creative services team comes up with some really interesting stuff.
Yeah.
They'll kind of storyboard out a vision and.
It's impressive.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's more them than it is me, but they know, I think they use me a lot because they're like, oh, Chambers will do it. He'll do anything,
right.
You know.
And Steve Templeton was creepy in that one. Like,
well,
whispering to women that it's hot right now.
It's on right now. It's on right now. We all have our strengths, Dave. You know, some of us are creepy whisperers and some of us are drill sergeants wearing aviators for some reason.
Exactly.
But thank you. I appreciate that. That's I like when they really let us have some fun.
So when you have time to yourself, if you can remember back that far.
Jeez.
Like, what do you do?
Oh, my God. I really don't remember that. You know, there's a couple of off-the-wall places. You're a Illinois guy.
I am.
You know, and this is going to sound like a free commercial, because I guess it kind of
is. Okay.
There's a guy... used to be in South Roxana, and now I think it's close to South Roxana, but maybe not right in there, who made all of his money when he was very young. Like, if you're driving down the interstate and you see these giant water-cooled circle saws where they're cutting out sections of pavement,
okay.
He was, like, manufacturing that kind of stuff. He made all of his money when he was young, kind of sold out of it. His wife was a registered nurse. She worked odd hours. He went stir-crazy, and he started, for whatever reason, playing pinball.
I've heard
and
of this
became
place.
His new obsession. And he would literally call bars in South City and say, what pinball machines do you have? And he'd take a roll of quarters. And then he realized, wait, I have some money. I'm just going to start buying pinball machines. And so now this guy has, it used to be, and this is the worst commercial ever. It used to be CP Pinball, because that's the guy's initials. But now he's opened a new location. It's called something else. And he owns, at any one time, 40 to 60 machines. And you can go in there on a Saturday and give him $20. And you can bring your own beverages
and just
stick them in a fridge, and everything's set to free play, and you could just play as long as you. And it's the clientele is what I think is most fascinating.
It's my hometown, I know.
You'll see people with their young kids. You'll see old guys with the big red elastic suspenders.
Yeah.
Just doing their thing and having a good time. And
I did not expect when I asked you about your hobbies, you to say pinball and South
Pinball Wizard.
That is.
Well,
you've been to that place, right?
I don't know if I have.
Well, I think you'd know if you had.
The coolest.
Yeah, I haven't. I didn't know of any pinball bars in that area.
Well, and the key is free play, because I'm a guy, like, if I'm going to go in, I'm going to go all in, and I don't want to have to worry about feeding coins and getting coins ahead of time and blah, blah, blah. And it's just the coolest. And
now, is that from your childhood? Were you a big game guy in your childhood?
Games, yeah. Pinball, not so much. I don't think I was quite the right age at the right time. I kind of came to pinball later, but when I was, I don't know, seven, eight, nine, somewhere in there, we got one of the original NESs, the Nintendo Entertainment System. Mm-hmm. And it was like the first year we didn't even know what it was. And we had like an Atari and a ColecoVision and that kind of stuff. But that for me, that and the Super Nintendo that followed were like that's what was in my wheelhouse. Yeah. I was the right age at the right time for those consoles.
And it's pretty close to you, right?
Yeah. I mean, I never owned a Nintendo, but one of my best friends had the Super Nintendo. We used to play Tecmo Bowl incessantly.
You, Tecmo Bowl?
Yeah, we played that in college for money. Yeah.
Yep.
Except you couldn't use the Raiders, because nobody was allowed to have Bo Jackson, because Bo Jackson, you couldn't tackle him. He'd just blow up everybody. And you couldn't use the 49ers, because the Montana to Brent Jones over the middle slant could not be stopped.
What else was your childhood? For example, my childhood was dads drinking Falstaff, mini bikes and go-karts, come home when the streetlights come on. Like, what sort of defined your childhood?
Okay, so come home when the streetlights come on definitely resonated, because I grew up in St. Joseph, Missouri, little town about 40, 45 minutes north of Kansas City. Good, 60, 65,000 people, but small enough that it felt safe. Everybody kind of knew everybody. And then for some reason, our house became the holiday spot.
That's cool.
So 4th of July, Christmas, mom's side and dad's side both coming together. When I think about my childhood, it's hard not to think about the holidays, because we were always kind of the hosts. And those were always so much fun. I mean, every trope you have in your head, the drunk uncle, you know, the grandma that pinches your cheeks, all of that was a part of that.
That's pretty great.
Yeah.
And who were you as a kid?
Oh my God. It's interesting. I had a really split childhood until about 10, we were in St. Joe. And then at the age of 10, so think about that. Think back to like a susceptible point in your childhood, say perhaps the summer between 5th and 6th grade.
That'll do it.
That's when we move. We move from St. Joe to Kansas City.
One of my biggest fears as a kid.
Now here, that's like, you know, moving from Chesterfield to St. Charles. But there, it's a totally, there's nothing in between the two. And it was just because one of my parents' jobs moved, the other one didn't. So we kind of moved halfway in between. But it was an uproot for a kid, because you're being pulled out of your grade school. You're being planted in a new school.
So did you reinvent yourself?
Well, not intentionally, but I think just naturally it kind of happened. And I swear to God, this is true. I think one of the most defining moments, we can all point to like five things in our lives that happened that sort of made us who we are. First day of school at the new school in Kansas City. My mom walks me into the gym where everybody's gathered, because you can't be dropped off right at school. Your mom's got to be at work half an hour early or whatever. So they let kids kind of gather by grade level in the gym. So in hindsight, I've realized that mom went in there, she found the sixth graders, and she scouted.
Huh.
And she set me with a group that she thought would probably be good.
How about that?
And I'm dead serious when I say I think that was one of the most important kind of decision points in my life, was getting sat down with that group of kids instead of this group of kids over here or that group of kids over there.
Could you have been pulled to the dark side? Were you like an iffy kid?
Like biker Matt?
Wow, that's a good question. At that age, I was very, what's the word? Suggestible.
Yeah.
I would have.
You're open.
I sort of morphed to fit whatever group I was with. I wanted to, you know, I was the kid that kind of wanted to be everybody's friend.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you were going down a certain path, I probably would have gone down that path with you, because I wanted to be chummy with you.
Who else is picturing Matt with face tattoos? And
guys, that Mac makeup hides. I was suggestible.
Yeah.
So I really do think that weird moment in time steered a lot of what I turned into. And then high school, I was kind of like, some of you guys could probably relate to this. I had sort of had a choice where I could be kind of the nerdiest of the jocks or the jockiest of the nerds. I was right in that gray zone.
100%.
And more often than not, probably leaned a little more toward jockiest of the nerds.
Yeah.
Like, I like, there's some, even to this day, I'm, I gravitate to people that are, I don't know, maybe a little awkward or just a little, you know what I mean?
Little Island of Misfit like Toys? To,
yes. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You want to hang out one
more? That's where we fit in. Sure,
you got nothing to do, right? You go home, you're going to go to work. You got to go to bed or go to work. Yeah, that's all you got.
This is the most relaxing.
This is the alone time you were talking about.
Welcome back, guys. DJ Astro Buddy Matt Chambers is here from Channel 4. Isn't that funny? I'm sure you're very happy that you're Matt Chambers from Channel 4 because it's been good to you and to your family, but still, it's always going to be
Matt Chambers from
comma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. One of my kids was just asking me the other day about like the first time I was ever recognized.
Yeah.
And I don't, the truth is I don't, this would have been Central Missouri, Columbia, Jeff City. I don't remember, but I do remember one of the earliest ones where I was in Walmart, I think in Jefferson City, and a woman, and again, was doing the same thing there that I do here, mostly weather, meteorologist. A woman came up to me and my wife, not wife at the time, but my girlfriend, now wife, was with me. And this woman came up to me and she said, "I'm so sorry. I don't want to bother you in the middle of aisle four here, but I just had to tell you, I don't even really follow sports, but the way you present it really makes it interesting."
That's great.
And I was just so flabbergasted that anyone even connected me neurally with a television station that I could have cared less.
Yeah, she said,
I was just like, you know what? Thank you so much. Oh, you don't know how much that means to me. I'm just starting out. I really appreciate
the first
it. That's what I always think about.
Two times I was recognized, I used to pick Nick up every morning and like...
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome back, guys. DGS, our buddy Matt Chambers is here from First Alert 4. See, I'm a company man. You guys have drilled it into my head now. You are, I usually get up.
Oh, my God.
I get up about 5:45, and I'm legitimately excited to watch you. You're my guy. But my HVAC units are old, and so when it's like 99 degrees, I dread you. Like, I'm watching, and like, oh, there's Claire, and oh, look at, there's Mo, and then here you come. I'm like, not today.
This jerk.
Not today, my friend.
You keep your mugginess to yourself, Chambers.
Talk to me when it's in the 80s.
That's right. But this week, you're delightful.
I was thinking, yeah, the Q rating is like all of a sudden through the roof.
Don't
talk to me in December.
Commiserating because Chambers and I will never retire. He because he has 14 kids. Me because I buy too many things on eBay.
Yeah,
but like Earhart's got a countdown. You're like, you know
I
what?
I know. And all these other people are going part time, and I'm like, you must be nice having a light at the end of the tunnel. I'll never know what that's like.
Someone recently, you're having one of those talks, you know, and people are kind of pumping in for information, and they're like, well, you seem to have such a close connection with your kids, and they seem to be everything to you. Can you imagine not having kids? I'm like, oh my God, can I ever? Oh, yes. To the point I had to pull it in.
Right. Like, bring it together, man. You're a dad. You're a dad. You love them.
You mean like this life without those two? Oh.
Oh my God, are you serious? I'm on a beach right now. Are you kidding?
I'd have so much.
Yeah, but blah, blah, blah. I wouldn't trade it for anything yet.
Exactly. What would I do without those guys? How many kids you up to now?
Six.
You sure?
Last count. Well, yeah. I mean, there's some...
You and McGonagall.
Legal. Yeah, that's right.
Lord.
Catholics. What are you going to do?
Not a damn thing you can do. I've told this story before, but I took he and his lovely wife to the ADA event, and I rented a limo bus and the whole bit, and everyone's in a suit and tie. And you know when you go to someone's house... And even if it's like a disaster, hey, let's pick it up a little. Let's throw this stuff into the closet. The McGonagalls didn't pick up one thing. there were 50 cat trees, and there were more little girls sitting on them than there were cats. I mean, it was they were painted like Native Americans. It was
Lord of the Flies.
It right. was
free range,
and they're, and they're like, just take a look. Yeah, this is what it is.
Now let's go to this event.
Now let's
quickly
get in the limo bus and drive away.
Yeah, there's a lot of like the thing that bothers me the most, because I am kind, you know, if I was a childless man, I'd probably have a, you know, there'd be a place for everything and everything in its place, but I just can't live that lifestyle. Thing that bugs me the most is there's not a drywalled corner in the house where you can't see whatever that metal thing is they put on there before they mud it and paint it, because... And if you can, it, like if there is still paint on it, it's so discolored at the height of hands that it's disgusting.
I'm like, you awesome. Have boys, don't you?
It's a mix. But yes, we've got
at least some in there, because you can tell.
Well, and you learn to let that kind of stuff go. And you know that one day, as you're puttying it all up, a little tear will come to the corner of your eye. You'll be like, you know,
that's
it's
right.
Too damn quiet in this house.
Phoebe's best friends in the neighborhood. There are six kids, six, seven, eight, and something like that. And at my 50th birthday party, I was talking to the dad, and I'm like, "How do you do it?" And he had the best response. He goes, "I do the same thing you do. We just have lower standards."
Okay. Yes, I think that's fair. I think that's fair. I just set the bar lower.
Yeah, that's all there is to it.
And I'm never disappointed.
I'm digging your new commercials. You like doing those?
Oh, thank you. I more than I should.
Yeah.
And that's not for, you know, if you ask different people at the station, you would get a wide range of answers. I love that kind of cheesy.
Yeah.
You know, I was the
you
kid.
You do it well.
I was in like the eighth grade musical. Like, yeah. I think I can act, even though I probably really can't. And our creative services team comes up with some really interesting stuff.
Yeah.
They'll kind of storyboard out a vision. And
it's impressive.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's more them than it is me, but they know, I think they use me a lot because they're like, "Oh, Chambers will do it. He'll do anything,"
right.
You know.
And Steve Templeton was creepy in that one, like,
well,
whispering to women that it's hot right now.
It's on right now. It's on right now. We all have our strengths, Dave, you know. Some of us are creepy whisperers, and some of us are drill sergeants wearing
yes,
for some
yes,
reason.
Exactly.
But thank you. I appreciate that. That's so, I like when they really let us have some fun.
So when you have time to yourself, if you can remember back that far,
geez.
Like what do you do?
Oh my God. I really don't remember that. You know, there's a couple of off the wall places. You're a Illinois guy.
I am.
You know, there's so, and this is going to sound like a free commercial because I guess it kind of
okay.
is. There's a guy. Used to be in South Roxana, and now I think it's close to South Roxana, but maybe not right in there, who made all of his money when he was very young. Like, mm-hmm. if you're driving down the interstate and you see these giant water-cooled circle saws where they're cutting out sections of pavement,
okay.
he was, like, manufacturing that kind of stuff. He made all of his money when he was young, kind of sold out of it. His wife was a registered nurse. She worked odd hours. He went stir-crazy, and he started, for whatever reason, playing pinball.
I've heard
and
of this
became
place.
His new obsession. And he would literally call bars in South City and say, "What pinball machines do you have?" And he'd take a roll of quarters at. And then he realized, wait, I have some money. I'm just going to start buying pinball machines. And so now this guy has, it used to be, and this is the worst commercial ever. It used to be CP Pinball, because that's the guy's initials. But now he's opened a new location. It's called something else. And he owns, at any one time, 40 to 60 machines. And you can go in there on a Saturday and give him $20. And you can bring your own beverages
and just
stick
play.
Them in a fridge, and everything's set to free play, and you could just play as long as you. And it's the clientele is what I think is most fascinating.
It's my hometown, I know.
You'll see people with their young kids. You'll see old guys with the big red elastic suspenders.
Yeah.
Just doing their thing and having a good time. And
I did not expect when I asked you about your hobbies, you to say pinball and South Roxana.
Pinball wizard.
That is.
Well,
you've been to that place, right?
I don't know if I have.
Well, I think you'd know if you had.
The coolest.
Yeah, I haven't. I didn't know of any pinball bars in that area.
Well, and the key is free play, because if I'm going to go in, I'm going to go all in, and I don't want to have to worry about feeding coins and getting coins ahead of time and blah blah blah. And it's just the coolest.
Now, is that from your childhood? Were you a big game guy in your childhood?
Games, yeah. Pinball, not so much. I don't think I was quite the right age at the right time. I kind of came to pinball later. But Yeah, when I was, I don't know, eight, nine, somewhere in there, we got one of the original NESs, the Nintendo Entertainment System. Mm-hmm. And it was like the first year, we didn't even know what it was. And we had like an Atari and a ColecoVision and that kind of stuff. But that for me, that and the Super Nintendo that followed were like that's what was in my wheelhouse. Yeah. I was the right age at the right time for those consoles.
And it's pretty close to you, right?
Yeah. I mean, I never owned a Nintendo, but one of my best friends had the Super Nintendo. We used to play Tecmo Bowl incessantly.
You, Tecmo Bowl?
Yeah, we played that in college for money. Yeah.
Yep.
Except you couldn't use the Raiders because nobody was allowed to have Bo Jackson. Because Bo Jackson, you couldn't tackle him. He'd just blow up everybody. And you couldn't use the 49ers because the Montana to Brent Jones over the middle slant could not be stopped.
What else was your childhood? For example, my childhood was dads drinking Falstaff, mini bikes and go-karts.
Ooh, yeah.
And come home when the streetlights come on. Like, what sort of defined your childhood?
Okay, so come home when the streetlights come on definitely resonated, because I grew up in St. Joseph, Missouri, little town about 40, 45 minutes north of Kansas City. Good city, 60, 65,000 people, but small enough that it felt safe. Everybody kind of knew everybody. And then for some reason, our house became the holiday spot.
That's cool.
So 4th of July, Christmas, mom's side and dad's side both coming together. When I think about my childhood, it's hard not to think about the holidays because we were always kind of the hosts. And those were always so much fun. I mean, every trope you have in your head, the drunk uncle, you know, the grandma that pinches your cheeks, all of that was a part of that.
That's pretty great.
Yeah.
And who were you as a kid?
Oh my God. It's interesting. I had a really split childhood until about 10, we were in St. Joe. And then at the age of 10, so think about that. Think back to like a susceptible point in your childhood, say perhaps the summer between 5th and 6th grade.
That'll do it.
That's when we move. We move from St. Joe to Kansas City.
One of my biggest fears as a kid.
Now here, that's like, moving from Chesterfield to St. Charles. But there, it's a totally, there's nothing in between the two. And it was just because one of my parents' jobs moved, the other one didn't. So we kind of moved halfway in between. But it was an uproot for a kid because you're being pulled out of your grade school. You're being planted in a new school.
So did you reinvent yourself?
Well, not intentionally, but I think just naturally it kind of happened. And I swear to God, this is true. I think one of the most defining moments, we can all point to like five things in our lives that happened that sort of made us who we are. First day of school at the new school in Kansas City. My mom walks me into the gym where everybody's gathered because you can't be dropped off right at school. Your mom's got to be at work half an hour early or whatever. So they let kids kind of gather by grade level in the gym. So in hindsight, I've realized that mom went in there, she found the 6th graders, and she scouted.
Huh.
And she set me with a group that she thought would probably be good.
How about that?
And I'm dead serious when I say I think that was one of the most important kind of decision points in my life, was getting sat down with that group of kids instead of this group of kids over here or that group of kids over there.
Could you have been pulled to the dark side? Were you like an iffy kid?
Like biker Matt?
Wow, that's a good question. At that age, I was very, what's the word? Suggestible.
Yeah,
I would have.
You're open.
I sort of morphed to fit whatever group I was with. I wanted to, I was the kid that kind of wanted to be everybody's friend.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you were going down a certain path, I probably would have gone down that path with you because I wanted to be chummy with you.
Who else is picturing Matt with face tattoos? And
guys, that Mac makeup hides. I was suggestible. Yeah. So I really do think that weird moment in time steered a lot of what I turned into. And then high school, I was kind of like, some of you guys could probably relate to this. I sort of had a choice where I could be kind of the nerdiest of the jocks or the jockiest of the nerds. I was right in that gray zone.
100%.
And more often than not, probably leaned a little more toward jockiest of the nerds.
Yeah.
Like there's some, even to this day, I'm, I gravitate to people that are I don't know, maybe a little awkward or just a little, you know what I mean?
Little Island of Misfit Toys.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Right.
You want to hang out one
that's
more?
That's where we fit in. Sure,
you
yeah.
got nothing to do, right? You go home, yeah. you're going to go to work. You got to go to bed or go to work. That's all you got.
This is the most relaxing.
This is the alone time you were talking about.
Welcome back, guys. DJ Astro Buddy Matt Chambers is here from Channel 4. Isn't that funny? I'm sure you're very happy that you're Matt Chambers from Channel 4. Because it's been good to you and to your family, but still, it's always going to be...
Matt Chambers from
comma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. One of my kids was just asking me the other day about like the first time I was ever recognized.
Yeah.
And the truth is, this would have been Central Missouri, Columbia, Jeff City. I don't remember, but I do remember one of the earliest ones where I was in Walmart, I think in Jefferson City, and a woman, and again, was doing the same thing there that I do here, mostly weather, meteorologist. A woman came up to me and my wife, not wife at the time, but my girlfriend, now wife, was with me. And this woman came up to me and she said, "I'm so sorry. I don't want to bother you in the middle of aisle four here, but I just had to tell you, I don't even really follow sports, but the way you present it really makes it interesting."
That's great.
And I was just so flabbergasted that anyone even connected me
sure.
neurally
right.
with a television station
right.
that I could have cared less.
Yeah,
she said,
didn't matter.
I was just like, you know what? Thank you so much. Oh, you don't man. Know how much that means to me. I'm just starting out. I really appreciate
the first
it. What I always think about
two
that.
Times I was... recognized. I used to pick Nick up every morning and like kindergarten, first grade, and take him to McDonald's. We'd have breakfast together, and there was a little coffee clutch there. And I walked in one day, and there's these old white guys drinking coffee, and they're like, "A celebrity sighting. How about this? And oh my gosh, he's going to buy the whole house of McMuffin." And then the one guy goes, "Everyone, from KC, I present Smash." Here's the worst part. I pretended to be Smash.
Nice.
Yeah.
Hey, baby.
I did.
Nice
I just went with it. I just went with
it. To be here.
And the second time I got caught slapping a pork butt at Schnucks. I have this, you've met me, I'm a weird guy, and I like slapping meat that's been packaged, and I forgot that someone might know me, and I was going to town. This pork had made me mad. I'm just smacking it.
Are you by yourself in
yes,
the store?
Yes.
And you're smacking and I'm a packaged
smacking,
meat product.
Yes, yes. And the lady's like, "I get it." And I'm like, "I don't know what you're talking about."
And you said, "It's me, Smash."
I don't know, babies.
You unlocked a childhood memory that now suddenly this like pail of guilt is coming over my head. I didn't do a lot of nasty, mean stuff as a kid, but I would when we were in the grocery store and mom was shopping and I was just bored out of my mind because you were always bored out of your mind while you were shopping with mom. I would walk down the butcher aisle and just poke holes. Just
same. Same.
You
I would.
I'm not the only
I
one.
Would. And oh I feel God. And I feel so guilty about it now, remembering
I
probably ruined
because
like,
you're both bad people. That's sinister.
Well, I'll tell you what, I stopped.
You probably poisoned somebody.
I don't know. It was a tactile thing. Like it's tight and then you hit it and it's just pop, and you
It was a great feeling.
Packaging bubbles.
I would do it now
but
if I wasn't scared of
bless you for admitting that. I stopped cold turkey because oh, and oh my God, I could almost draw the sketch. This memory is so vivid. I was going down the line, pop, pop, pop. And I freeze just because all of a sudden I sense a presence. And like, imagine you're a tiny kid, your head barely comes up to the level of the meat, and you slowly pivot your neck up. And there is the grisliest looking butcher.
Oh, man.
With blood on his white coat that I've ever seen. And he just, no words are exchanged. He just looks at me in the eyes and he shakes his head no. And he starts picking up the ones that I popped.
You got off early.
He's going to rewrap them.
I'm never doing that
anymore. Yeah.
That dude was the most intimidating character in my life.
Chilling.
I can't believe you did that too, Andy.
Yeah.
Like, somehow I feel better.
Yeah.
No one's ever said that before. Oh, Andrew Stolz did it. Okay.
I feel better as a human being.
I feel so much better.
Well, that's where I am right now, Dave, okay? That's where I am.
That is sad. There's your new ad.
I have.
You popping meat at Schnucks.
I feel good, too. I have kept that shame for many, many years.
See, it feels good. To just
now you'll brag about it. You know, so me and Matt Chambers.
Oh, yeah. So we were poking holes in.
We were both the cool kids. Right.
The ground beef the other day.
Me and Steve Savard used to trip a lot of old people. And what are you gonna do?
You just run away and they can't keep up.
You should try smacking it.
Yeah. Well, this is, you've opened my eyes to a whole new plethora of
maybe go to Aldi's. I don't even think they frown upon it at Aldi's.
What is it about the, I just don't, the smacking.
If it were just the meat, that'd be gross. But when you put the cellophane over it, it's
totally
a lot
fine.
Like the pop in it.
Okay.
It's just not quite as adverse to the public as what you did. So.
But is the, are you like winding up, like the hands coming
I was
way
when
up
she saw me.
You...
I started out just like a little tappy, tappity, tap, tap, tap. and then it sucked me in. Thank you, Matt Chambers. Welcome back, guys. DJ Astro Buddy Matt Chambers is here from Channel 4. Isn't that funny? I'm sure you're very happy that you're Matt Chambers from Channel 4 because it's been good to you and to your family, but still, it's always going to be
Matt Chambers from
comma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. One of my kids was just asking me the other day about like the first time I was ever recognized.
Yeah.
And I don't, the truth is, I don't, this would have been Central Missouri, Columbia, Jeff City. I don't remember it, but I do remember one of the earliest ones where I was in Walmart, I think in Jefferson City. And a woman, and again, was doing the same thing there that I do here, mostly weather, meteorologist. A woman came up to me, and my wife, not wife at the time, but my girlfriend, now wife, was with me. And this woman came up to me, and she said, I'm so sorry. I don't want to bother you in the middle of aisle four here, but I just had to tell you, I don't even really follow sports, but the way you present it really makes it interesting.
That's great.
And I was just so flabbergasted that anyone even connected me neurally with a television station.
Right.
But I could have cared less.
Yeah,
she said,
didn't matter.
I was just like, you know what? Thank you so much. Oh, you don't know how much that means to me. I'm just starting out. I really appreciate
the first
it. But I always think about
two
that.
Times I was recognized. I used to pick Nick up every morning and like kindergarten, first grade, and take him to McDonald's. We'd have breakfast together. And there was a little coffee clutch there. And I walked in one day and there's these old white guys drinking coffee and they're like, a celebrity sighting. How about this? And oh my gosh, he's going to buy the whole house of McMuffin. And then the one guy goes, everyone, from KC, I present Smash. Here's the worst part. I pretended to be Smash.
Nice.
Yeah.
Hey, baby.
I did.
Nice
I just went with it. I just
went with it. To be here.
And the second time I got caught slapping a pork butt at Schnucks. I have this, you've met me, I'm a weird guy, and I like slapping meat that's been packaged, and I forgot that someone might know me, and I was going to town. This pork had made me mad. I'm just smacking it.
Are you by yourself in
yes,
the store?
Yes,
and you're smacking a packaged meat product.
Yes, yes. And the lady's like, I get it. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about.
And you said, it's me, Smash.
Hello, babies.
You unlocked a childhood memory that now suddenly this like pail of guilt is coming over my head. I didn't do a lot of nasty, mean stuff as a kid, but I would when we were in the grocery store and Mom was shopping and I was just bored out of my mind because you were always bored out of your mind while you were shopping with Mom. I would walk down the butcher aisle and just poke holes.
Same.
I would. I'm not the only
I
one.
Would. And oh I feel God. And I feel so guilty about it now, remembering I probably ruined
because you're both bad people. That's sinister.
Well, I'll tell you what, I stopped.
You probably poisoned somebody.
I don't know. It was a tactile thing. Like it's tight and then you hit it and it's just pop popping you.
Yeah.
It was
it's
like
a great feeling.
Packaging bubbles.
I would do it now
but
if I wasn't scared of
bless you for admitting that. I stopped cold turkey because and oh my God, I could almost draw the sketch. This memory is so vivid. I was going down the line, pop, pop, pop. And I freeze just because all of a sudden I sense a presence. And like, imagine you're a tiny kid, your head barely comes up to the level of the meat, and you slowly pivot your neck up. And there is the grisliest looking butcher.
Oh, man.
With blood on his white coat that I've ever seen. And he just, no words are exchanged. He just looks at me in the eyes and he shakes his head no. And he starts picking up the ones that I popped.
You got off early.
He's going to rewrap them.
I'm never doing that
again. Yeah.
That dude was the most intimidating character in my life.
Chilling.
I can't believe you did that too, Andy.
Yeah.
Like, somehow I feel better.
Yeah.
No one's ever said that before. Oh, Andrew Stolz did it. Okay.
I feel better as a human being.
I feel so much better now.
Well, that's where I am right now, Dave, okay? That's where I am.
That is sad. There's your new ad.
I have.
You popping meat at Schnucks.
I feel good, too. I have kept that shame for many, many years.
See, it feels good. To just
now you'll brag about it. You know, so me and Matt Chambers.
Oh, yeah. So we were poking holes in.
We were both the cool kids. Right.
The ground beef the other day.
Me and Steve Savard used to trip a lot of old people. And what are you going to do?
You just run away and they can't keep up.
You should try smacking it.
Yeah. Well, this is, you've opened my eyes to a whole new plethora of
maybe go to Aldi's. I don't even think they frown upon it at Aldi's.
What is it about the, I just don't. The smacking.
If it were just the meat, that'd be gross. But when you put the cellophane over it, it's
totally
a lot
fine.
Like the popping it.
Okay.
It's just not quite as adverse to the public as what you did. So.
But are you like winding up, like the hands coming
I was
way
when
up
she saw me.
I
started out just like a little tappy tappity tap tap tap. and then it sucked me in. Thank you, Matt Chambers.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!